Okay. So next is talking about negative and positive arguments. And so here he's going to kind of critique Vantel's position just a little bit more. And he says that Vantel does not just stress the use of transcendental or presuppositional arguments. He also insists that if arguments are to be authentically presuppositional, they must be negative rather than positive. And he defines this negative version as an indirect argument is sometimes called reductio ad absurdum. You take the person's position as a point of okay, let's assume you're right. All things entailed, everything that you said, let's bring it in. Now let's look at the repercussions or the outcomes or the what must follow from that idea, belief, or answer that you're giving for the position. And he says, we do this all the time. We do this, we do indirect proofs or reductios in math is a proof and it assumes the presupposition. We say, okay, for the sake of argument, what must be the case? And then we do that as a position to try and refute that particular claim. He says, one tentatively adopts, say, a proposition A, and then deduces from its logical contradictions or some propositions that it is obviously false. You say you want this. Here's what it turns out. Do you really want that? Well, no, because that denies, human freedom or the ability to know things, or it would let ethically anything in. And so that way it shows that A, whatever position A is false by taking it to the logical conclusion, holding to the fact that here are your presuppositions that you want to hold to, and then this follows. So,
right. So the basic idea of a reducto is that you assume the thing that you want to show is false, right? So let's assume that A is the case, right? So we assume that A is the case, and then we, based on A, it leads us to usually a contradiction. And so that's the ad absurdum part of the reducto. It's reduced to absurdity, right? So we assume that A is the case. Based on that assumption, when our argument, it leads us to a contradiction. So if our assumption leads us to a contradiction, right, like we assume A, and then it leads us to, well, B and not B, that's the contradiction, that's the absurdum part, then we know that our assumption A is not true, it's false. And so that's the basic structure of a reductio ad absurdum argument, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what he's suggesting here, that the tag argument kind of works off of. So he says, in theistic arguments, the indirect argument would run like this. God doesn't exist, right? So that's the assumption, right? And therefore, causality or whatever, science or logic or ethics or whatever, is meaningless, right? So we assume A, right? God doesn't exist. It gets us to a contradiction that, for instance, we can't do logic or there's no basis for logic. So now we're making a logical argument that there is no logical argument. That's our contradiction, right? Mm-hmm. Logic doesn't exist. And therefore, it's meaningless. And therefore, we know that our assumption that God doesn't exist, is false. Right? And he says, since we're unwilling to accept the conclusion of this type of argument, and we must negate the premise and say that God, in fact, does exist.
Right.
Now, it says, certainly arguments of this form are often useful. But, and remember, what he's suggesting here is that Vantel is saying you only should use negative arguments, mm-hmm. right? That's what he's going after here, because he's not buying that particular claim. He says, he has a question about these various negative arguments. Are indirect or these kind of arguments really distinct from direct arguments? So that's his question, right?
He Columbos us. He's like, oh, this is a long time. Well, hold on. I just have one question, right? So instead of always taking this negative approach, doesn't it seem like you could just as easily flip and make it into a positive type of argument? And is there that big a gap between the two that what Vantel is saying is you must or you should always pick your flavoring of verbiage there, take a negative reductio approach to other ones. So he says then in final analysis, it doesn't make much difference whether you say causality, therefore God, or without God, no causality, therefore God. So the, you know, the negation of P kind of deal. Any indirect argument of this sort can be turned into a direct argument by some creative rephrasing. And that doesn't seem to be that big of a distinction if you just say, you know, this, therefore, B, or without this, then, you know, no A, and therefore, you would still have B. So it doesn't seem like that big of a distinction that would really cause us to have to take the kind of the Ventilian approach of always taking a negative approach to apologetics. He says, then the indirect form has some rhetorical advantage, at least. But if the indirect form is sound, then the direct form will be just as much too, and vice versa. If we say without God, no causality, the argument is incomplete unless he adds the positive formulation, but there is causality, therefore God exists, a formulation identical to the direct argument. Therefore, he says, I think Ventil's restriction of the apologist to the exclusive use of the negative arguments is unreasonable. And one book that I would point out to kind of show this is The Five Views of Apologetics, the Reformed Epistemology Approach, kind of takes this very much to heart and you know, says like, God exists and we know it through various forms, and we're not trying to prove God, but we're trying to clean the slate of anything that comes about, and says kind of the deal of all these other argumentations falters, and there's no true big reason why you have to give kind of a positive approach, but you're kind of negating all these approaches. So that's a good book that kind of shows, and actually Frame is on the position of the presuppositional approach, and I think Kelly is the last name of the person for the Reformed Epistemology. So that's and that's a great book that I think we did a one shot on as well. So I'll drop a link in there as well.
Yeah. Good. So you know, then the next issue is, he says, well, why would Van Til try to just stick to these negative arguments when, first of all, you know, the negative arguments can be turned into a positive argument. And so basically, you know, they're the same kind of approach. You can, you know, switch them around here, right? So he says, well, maybe, he says, Van Til had a wonderful eye for spiritual problems in apologetic encounters. He saw the need to rebuke intellectual pride, to reject the spirit of autonomy, and to hold fast to the universal lordship of Christ over all structures of meaning. And so, you know, he says, Van Til then tended to think that these problems were best handled by restricting apologetics to certain formulated methods. So in order to combat pride, we stick with this particular apologetic method, right? That's what he's suggesting Van Til was after. Unfortunately, Frame tells us, the suggested methods, even apart from their other difficulties, do not necessarily eliminate, right, the spiritual problem, which is pride, right? The sinful attitude of the would-be intellectual. Sinful attitudes, Frank tells us, can be present no matter what kind of argument we employ. So yes, Van Til was attempting to accomplish this dealing with pride, sinful pride, and that sort of thing, and suggested that that's why we do these negative arguments, to kind of show the unbeliever how far off they really are, and to deal with their pride. Of course, Frame is suggesting that, well, you know, it may or may not work, right? Sinful attitudes can be present no matter what kind of argument we use,
right?
Is what he's claiming.
Right. So positive, negative, you know, it seems like you're...
Tomato.
You're applying just two sides of the same coin there.
Yeah.